Hello.
Hello, can you hear us okay?
Yes, I can.
Thanks very
Good
much for
to hear.
joining us on the show.
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it was really great to meet you at the 8-Bit Symphony. Wondered if we could hear a little bit about your association with that event because you were involved a little bit with hooking them up with the orchestrator.
Yeah, I was, yes. Ali was the winner of the last year's competition of the arenas competition in the Netherlands. We, as a jury, had to select who did the arrangements the best, basically, without knowing who was actually being the arranger, basically. And it ended up being him the best, according to our jury, basically. And he was 21 years old, Ali Pickering, Alistair Pickering
That's pretty
of
incredible.
UK. Yeah, it was, and I was really, really pleasantly surprised when he stepped forward, and when I saw the guy, I was like, "Seriously, this guy?" But I remember I was like a kid prodigy or something, you know what I mean? With all these the game music when I was 14, 15, and all that stuff. So I really like, well, I got a good association with him basically, and I said, you know, there's this 8-bit symphony coming up with Rob Hubbard and all that stuff, and Chris Abbott was organizing it, and I brought them directly into contact within the same week to have him arrange, well, you know, help him arrange the orchestration for the 8th Symphony. And, you know, Alistair loved it, and Chris Abbott liked it, and they got in contact, and he actually basically did, he did way, way, way more than I would think he would have done with the arrangements as well. Whilst Alistair, I mean, he's studying music in Amsterdam, and whilst he was doing his, you know, finished his exams and everything in music, so it's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's absolutely outstanding, man. That's quite
Yeah, it really
an
was. It really was.
apprenticeship of fire.
Yeah,
He's
I'm
definitely
really proud
proving
of this
himself.
guy. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So I think, yeah, well, you know, even Rob Hubbard said to me when we were talking at this bar next to the venue, in the aftermath, basically, he said, "This Alistair guy, seriously, this Ali guy, that's gonna be way up there. That's gonna be way up there. I mean, look at 20 years where he will be. You know what I'm saying?"
Yeah, well, I was amazed at some of
And
the depth
I
of
was saying the
those
same thing. I said, I mean,
arrangements.
this is what I noticed, and you notice it too. When we both notice, then that's true. It really has that thing, you know. He does a lot of stuff for his own big band, basically. He arranges all that stuff, and it's just fucking brilliant. Pardon my French, but
No,
it's
don't worry
fucking
about
brilliant.
that. You can
It's
swear on this
fucking
show.
brilliant.
We swear every week, God
Really
knows
good.
that.
Yeah. You know, it's really just amazing that, you know, you can, you know, there's like, I think it's life, you know. Sometimes you meet people and you don't even know where you're gonna meet them, or you don't even know what life's about, but then at some point you touch base, you know,
Yeah,
with the people
absolutely.
with the same interests. And well, what's the biggest interest in people's lives? I mean, I think generally, if you would, okay, this may sound a little bit weird, but I think it's true. What would people first give up? I mean, like there's all this stupid things that kids do, like would you give up your sight or your hearing? No, yeah, well, first you don't want to lose either of them, but if I had to give up art, you know, visual art or music, I think most people would really choose art to give up and not give up on music, because music is so much more meaningful,
And it's always
because
there too.
it's always there, it's all around you. You can literally hear it from the back and from the front, and but within it, there's a lot of messaging. I mean, if you look at the picture, well, you've seen it, right? When you just look at it, there it is. Then there's, of course, there comes that's a question I had with a friend of mine. It's like, okay, would you give up movies or music? It's like, okay, that is like a bullshit term. Would you give up silent movies or music? That's the only question you could ask.
Yeah, I see what you're saying actually. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, it makes sense, right? Silent movies. Okay, I can give them up easily. I just don't like it.
Yeah, no
Even
problem. Never a fan of Charlie Chaplin anyway.
though my grandfather used to play the piano at the silent movies in the 20s.
Oh, really? That's interesting actually.
Yeah, it is. So what? No, music is like, I mean, you see everyone walking around with the headphones, right? These days, you know, we don't see them walking around with well, with the VR goggles, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like just scrolling through the Mona Lisa whilst walking.
Maybe give it 10 years.
Yeah, you never know. When we've all got things plugged directly into our eyes.
Augmented reality kind of thing, but that would be Google Glasses, right? And that didn't work out.
No,
so.
It didn't, actually. What was that, like 10 years ago now on the Google Glasses?
Oh, yeah, easy. Yeah,
we certainly don't see them anymore.
No.
No. It didn't work.
Mm-hmm. So are you going to be at the Back in Time concert that's coming up in Bergen then? Because I've just booked my tickets.
Yes, I will be there again, like last year.
Excellent, excellent. So hopefully we'll meet up again there. And I'm still trying to get you to come, Dale. Just so you know, you won't have to pay for a hotel. I'll throw that out there quickly. But we'll see if we can get Dale to come as well.
It's quite a bargaining chip.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, if you can make sure that the plane doesn't kind of crash, then I'm fine.
Well, yeah, that's not really my responsibility, though, is it?
That's how it almost crashed, you know that, right?
Really?
What, when he was coming here?
No.
Oh, come on. I even mentioned that in the show. There's obviously the plane I took from Stockholm to Bergen. We had 140 kilometers an hour side winds, and that plane almost crashed, apparently.
Jesus.
And well, when I was inside of it, it kind of felt like it would have done, but people were, there was two children. I mean, I focused on that. They were playing Minecraft, and I was just on them, and they said, like, woo, roller coaster. So when the plane started doing these really, really, well, you know, the turbulence doesn't just describe what happened, but I landed and I was really happy that the plane was on the ground. The main stewardess, she said, a big round of applause for the pilot who put this plane to the ground. You know how it was, right? You know, and then I talked to this captain and said, okay, how severe was this on a scale from 1 to 100? He said, no, I will not put it into scale. Well, let's say it is in the it's, well, it's right at the top, he said. But this kind of stuff keeps us on our toes. That's what he said.
Right.
Wow.
That's one way to put it. I don't think Dale's going to come now.
Believe me, I was in that chair with my straps on, you know. If you wouldn't have it on, you would be up and down on that in the plane. It was really bad.
Right. Well, I'm looking forward to that then.
Yeah, but then 1.5 hours later, I was doing the performance at Bergen Time. So I was a happy man.
Yeah, and are you performing this year?
That's so weird. Sorry, pardon me?
Are you performing this year as well?
Yes.
Yeah, well, looking forward to that. Because to be honest, I don't know fully what to expect. It seems like a kind of mini festival.
Yeah, there's live rock band.
Fast loaders will be there, right?
Yeah. Exactly. And I'm not sure who will attend as well. Chris Hulsbeck was there last year. Rain was there last year. I was there last year, but I didn't do live playing. But that's what I'm gonna do this year. I'm practicing for that. I really don't know. I hope they got the same crowd there as well. I'm actually curious about what's going to be there. I mean, I tried to Rob Hubbard there as well, but Rob is like a bit, he's like retired, as he said, you know. He is up for stuff, but it depends on his life situation at the time, you know.
Of course,
so I will not talk for Rob here, because I mean, Rob deserves his peace and quiet, you know.
Oh, of course.
So he's been doing a lot last year. I mean, for that Abe Symphony, he really worked his ass off, you know.
Yeah, and then you said, Dale, he was in the pub afterwards getting mobbed by God knows how many people.
Yeah, about 10 people around him wanting to buy him drinks.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, why not?
It was an absolutely incredible event.
Doctor was really good. So saying, you know, he's very... most people don't, he's not some kind of rock star, you know. This is a guy that's extremely intelligent, extremely talented, almost sounds the same, doesn't it? Very modest, but also very outspoken. And he does this stuff because he loves the music that he created, basically composed. He was always very modest about it as well. And, you know, he does this stuff. I mean, even with the Commodore 64 Orchestra in 2006, he worked with me. And he did it with such passion and such integrity. It's hard to be found, basically. You understand?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, sorry. That's like condescending when I say you understand. But I'm just saying that he's very moderate, and he tries to keep his life a little bit on a moderate side, let me put it this. But if he feels like he's doing it, he's going to do it, and he's going to really stand up. And I think he might, but I don't know.
Well, that'd be a surprise if Rob Hubbard shows up.
Did his kind of work ethic and his passion for his work kind of rub off onto you and G you up more to, you know, get everything spot on? So I imagine working with such a legend like Rob Hubbard would have inspired you, you know, even after all of what you've done to, you know, really nail it.
Well, yeah, I call him the godfather of Sid. I mean, when I was 13, I started calling him on his private home number. It's the truth. And he really liked that attention. Well, for me, because I was asking the right music questions and everything, if I would be just some kind of fan, blah, 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 but which I was. But I knew that what he was doing was something completely out of the ordinary, you know, so making music for video games. And then I learned that it was actually not his thing at all. It was just he was a programmer, tried to write games and programs, and then he made music to it, and people were only interested in the music. And then he got hired to do the music for video games, you know. That's how it came to be. And then I learned about his musical heritage, and, well, I have a strong musical heritage as well. So we could communicate on a music level, but it was really like this thing that you just have to do what you have to do, you know, that kind of thing. So it was, it was a definite inspiration. Also for my brother, who makes number one hits in the Netherlands, I mean, every year now. And also, Rob Howard was a very strong inspiration for my brother, you know.
Oh, that's cool. It's amazing where you can pull inspiration from, and, you know, the different walks of life that you take from, and it translates into your work.
But I studied Rob Hubbard. Really, I sat down, wrote down, like, okay, this is the intro, this is the verse, this is the chorus, this is a solo, and I just wrote down all the structures and the notes. I even hacked into his routine when I couldn't do proper programming myself yet. I hacked into it just to create some songs, you know. It's like this classic piece, that's it. It's like one of them. I just hacked into his routine and did it in, like, monitor mode, you know, not even with the assembler or something. Just wanted to have his sounds played through me, you know, the kind of thing, the music I had in my head, I wanted to have it played by the set. And but the work ethic, as you were talking about, I think I did do that thing that you don't do that easily, that you sit down and do it, you know, like discipline. I got to be honest with you right now. Sometimes I don't have it because of some personal shit, you know. Pardon my French there.
Oh, don't worry.
You know, no. Sometimes you get a bit held back, but I know it will come back because it's that flow of music, you know.
I think every one of us who's creative has felt that.
Oh, yeah, but it's like it's the same thing with Rob, like, making music to make people happy with music, you know, to inspire them. And there's so many people. I mean, yeah, I don't know if that sounds arrogant or not, but there's thousands of people who come forward to me. Like I came forward to Rob Hubbard, but that at the time we didn't have internet or anything, or not email or something. I really had to call him up personally because otherwise I had to travel all the way to England, you know, which right. I didn't have the resources to.
Oh, we just dropped out of Skype there. Looks like we've had a Skype dropout or something to that effect. Well, we could probably just go ahead and play that tune from RoboCop 3 that we were going to play anyway. And see if we can reconvene on the chat somewhere or something like that. Because we certainly don't want dead air. That's number one no-no, isn't it? But yeah, excellent to talk to Giro. And even for that little slice, well, I say little, it was still a quarter of an hour. Was hoping to get some thoughts on RoboCop 3, which we're going to play now. And this is an absolute tune. But we're going to have to let it speak for itself, which it certainly can do. See, there goes Skype. Bye-bye. Let's get the volumes right here before we listen to the main intro music from RoboCop 3. This is such a C64 classic. Thank you. Okie dokie. So we're actually going to get Jerome back on the line to hear a little bit about RoboCop 3 quickly, I think, and then do a proper outro, as he said. So let's try and get him back on the line quickly. Get those Skype chimes down. Get them Skype chimes right down. Oh, hello, Jerome.
Hayley.
Welcome
Sorry.
Back.
Well, there was like I was talking about like these thousands of people contacting me like, oh, I got into music because of you and blah, blah, blah. But right. While that happened on my mobile phone, actually some people, multiple people tried to contact me.
So
I don't know why.
Phone was blowing up.
Well, yeah, we actually...
Is this live? Is this live, by the way?
It is live, yeah.
I mean, maybe it's because of that.
Yeah, maybe. You never know. Don't worry. This is not the first time we've had problems with Skype in the past.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Don't worry about that. Skype's a little bit old school right now.
Yeah, definitely.
But, it's very interesting to see how, you know, I got influenced by, I mean, we're talking about like from Mozart, Beethoven, Level 42, Chomsajar. Seriously, when I start mentioning artists, it's bullshit because there's too many people that inspired me, but also inspired others. Tumblestone kind of thing, like it rolls on. You inspire people. I get inspired, you know, and then those people I inspired will inspire other people too.
Well, we just heard RoboCop 3 in that little break. I wondered if you could talk behind some of the... it was the intro that we played from RoboCop 3. I wonder if you could talk a little bit behind what was behind that. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
It was very simple. I just... I was working at Probe Software Limited in London, in Croydon, East Croydon, and I sat down at 1 o'clock, It was exactly 1 o'clock at night, English time. And I sat down and just had to write the music for RoboCop 3. And when it was 9 o'clock in the morning, I had it finished.
You know, I heard that from both Rob and Ben Dalglish when I spoke to both of them. They told very similar stories about these huge, famous tunes that people absolutely love. Yeah.
But I didn't sit down with this particular idea. I just know what RoboCop was about. That's all it was. And I thought, that's a bit epic. Like kind of guitar tune-ish, that's what I thought, you know, a bit of hard rock-ish, but you couldn't do that on NES, of course, but I just tried to make it, like, kind of epic, and I wouldn't have done it any differently if I would have done it now, like, in a couple of weeks. No, it would have been exactly the same. And most of the tracks I did are really spontaneous, you know. That doesn't go to say that it took me a lot of training to be able to do these kind of tracks, you know, because it was... seriously, tens of thousands of hours to get to the point where I was able to do it. But that one's literally like 1 o'clock at night. I mean, seriously, being able to work at the offices at the time, I just said, okay, I'm not like this, your general geezer.
You picked up the English lingo.
Yeah, God.
Yeah, of course. I mean, seriously, I worked with like Darren White. I mean, he was like, all right, mate, brilliant programmer. I'm actually kidding him a little bit, but you know, he had this really strong Bristol accent or something. It was too much fun. No, but we were able to work at the office. We just had 24/7 access basically on the office as long as we did our jobs basically. So, but it was a really good thing to write it right there because we had a Nintendo development kit of £50,000. You have to understand that.
Wow.
That would never have happened in the Netherlands when I would have worked from home because there was only like the Commodore 64, the Amiga available, you know. And that was, but we had to like share that thing too. Like during the daytime, the programmer would use it, and during the nighttime, I would use it to make the music, which I prefer, of course.
Hmm.
It's just, it's really funny that what I thought of it has been covered by like Zebras from Russia as a metal tune, which I had in mind, basically. That's really funny.
Well, I'll have to try.
Zebras is you can find it on YouTube.
Yeah, we'll try and play it next week.
Oh, it's really nice. But anyway, it was always inspired music, basically. When the inspiration was there, and I just started it. I didn't pre-compose at all, ever. None of the songs from that era was just like pre-composed. It was just sitting down and doing it. programming it, you know, typing it in hexadecimal numbers. That's what I did.
Which is all the more impressive when you hear those things back.
It's weird.
Yeah, yeah. They're just so tight.
Everyone around me is like, even my friends, I go, what the fuck? What the fuck are you doing? What the hell is this? to me, it was like, I mean, I don't want to oversell it, you know. I don't want to like sound like all this thing. But it's just like, no, seriously, when I did it, to me, that's musical notation, and I think people can learn it. I mean, it's the trick of the trade, basically. That's what we need. What it needs to do to make all that happen within 4K or 5K, you know, 5 kilobytes. You had to do it like that way. There was no other way. You couldn't have used MIDI or something, you know. Yeah, there's no 29 kilobytes available in a game or anything like that. You know, it was a very interesting thing. But it was very natural. It was very natural in the end. In the beginning, it was very troublesome to get to where I was. But once I got it, it worked.
And I hear that a lot as well from composers from the time, that it was so much more comfortable than you'd think.
To me, it was very comfortable to write that way. Yeah. Still is, actually. When I sit down behind some emulator, or actually at a real 64, and I see that program in front of me, it's like, you know, child's play. To me, because I did the pre-study. Yeah, that's it.
Right, well, thanks very much for speaking to us today, Joe, and it's been great.
Well, anytime. My pleasure. I mean, seriously, thanks for having me. And, well, I love that the scene's still alive. And this Commodore 64 is coming out as we speak. Absolutely. You've seen that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that we've got to be speaking so about brilliant. That later on in the show, definitely.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, I love it.
It's absolutely brilliant.
Good.
And we'll definitely speak again, because I want to speak about a lot of the modern demo scene stuff that's going on, the scene sat stuff as well. We'll definitely have a conversation about that.
Guys, you're always welcome. Seriously, I mean, you know, my heart is with the demo scene. You know that, right? And you know the Commodore scene, of course.
Awesome. I mean, yeah, man.
Well, that's always good to hear. We'll stay in touch then, definitely.
Oh yes, awesome. Okay, so good luck with the show. I will try to catch you online now, and let's see what comes out of it.
All right, awesome. Thank you very much, Ron. We'll stay in touch.
And a good thing. I'm going to do a mod pack for Counter-Strike Go.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
Man, nice.
It's going to be in that kind of 8-bit vibe.
Oh,
I was
cool.
Asked by the friend of the guy that invented Counter-Strike, basically, as a mod.
Right. That's totally awesome. I'm looking forward to that.
How weird is that, huh?
Yeah.
It's small world after all, isn't it?
Well, yeah. When that comes around, we'll definitely speak about that on the show as well, then.
Yes, man. Yes. Cheers for talking to us, man. It's been ace talking.
Anytime.
Have yourself a good night, man.
Okay, you bet. Bye-bye.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.